Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Anxious Nation explores and captures the many faces and facets of anxiety. The film delves into the crisis of mental health and anxiety in America while focusing on subject ages from 8 to 26. This unabashedly honest and insightful film provides audiences with a raw and intimate look into the lives of families and kids grappling with anxiety and the duality of how their parents are trying to understand and help. We're joined today by Vanessa Roth as well as Laura Morton. They are both co-directors and co-writers of Anxious Nation. Laura is also the producer. To both of you, welcome to Film School Radio.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, Laura, I'll start with you in terms of how the film project got underway. What was the inspiration? What was it about this moment that you wanted to do this particular project, Anxious Nation?
The film really started in 2018. I was sitting at my desk feeling very defeated as a parent. I have at the time she was an 11-year-old daughter who had been struggling with anxiety for most of her life. And I could not figure out why she wasn't getting better. And I felt as her mom that I was really letting her down. I also at the time thought it was really just happening in our home. It wasn't something that a lot of people were going through. So out of curiosity, I put a post on Facebook that said, one line, it just said, kids in anxiety, who's dealing with it? And I was really stunned by the response that I got. On Facebook, I got a lot of short answers. I am, we are, my daughter is, my granddaughter is. But it was the private messages that came through, Mike, that really rocked my world. And they were messages from people that I knew, messages from people that I spent time with. And we had never discussed our children's anxiety and what was happening in our homes. And that single post gave, it was like I ripped the shroud of secrecy off of this topic. There was so much stigma attached to it. And I'm a storyteller by trade. Mike, I'm an author, 21-time New York Times bestselling author. And I just sat there and I thought, man, there has to be a story here. Like, there's got to be something that I can delve into. And I had never made a movie, but it felt like something that needed to have that narrative, that connection, that people could feel seen and heard. Because I knew if my family was struggling, I could not imagine how other families were getting through it. And that's really the impetus behind the film and why I set out to really ask some very, I think, deep questions. One, you know, at the time I wanted to know, are we more anxious or are we just more aware of it? I wanted to know why this was happening. And I really wanted to understand what we could do about it. And then along came COVID. You know, we started filming in 2019 and then in 2020, it was like gasoline had been poured all over this already burning inferno. The question of whether or not we were more anxious or just more aware of it kind of seemed moot after COVID. So that's really the genesis of the film. You know, all throughout, Vanessa Roth was somebody that I really had wanted to work with. I wanted her to direct this film, but she didn't come on board right away. And I'll let Vanessa share that story with you. You know, it really was important to me that the film have a director that had empathy for the subject and an understanding of the subject and who could bring this story to life without feeling like we're shaming anybody.
Vanessa Roth, when Laura Morton approached you about this project, what was your initial reaction?
Well, so when Laura first came to me, when she first decided that she wanted to make this documentary, like she said, it was, you know, 2018, and we may have even met early that year. And at the time, I had two daughters who were one was in college by that time, and one was in high school. And then I had a son that was a kid at the time, young kid. And I've done a lot of films that are about, you know, child welfare, well-being, mental health. I've done a lot about families. I come from a social work background a long, long time ago before making documentaries. So my films tend to be about sort of how we are all doing in the world and impacts of the world on us personally. But when she came to me, to be honest, I really didn't want to do it. I really was being sort of very self-protective. I felt like I was seeing and handling so much anxiety and depression that my own kids and their peers were all going through. And I felt like I just really didn't actually want to also do a film about it. It was almost just too close to home for me. And so Laura actually went off and shot the film and had a great crew that did a lot of the work up until a time when, after COVID had hit and just the world was in a place, I think in these last couple of years, that really went further for everyone I knew in that age group in terms of their own mental stability and just emotional and psychological state of being, that I just felt it was the right thing to do, to come on board and do whatever I could from my perspective to help Laura bring the film to fruition and to make sure that we were able to make a film that is authentic and honest and sensitive, and most of all, really reflects the interior experience of kids and families, which is why, when you ask about the vision of it, which is why we brought in the artwork that we did, because there are a lot of interviews, which I think are really special and important. But to me, I really wanted something to give us a little bit more of a visceral feeling of, if you don't know what anxiety feels like, you know, we felt that artwork that's made by kids, which in the film, all the artwork that's in the film is by kids around the world, who are struggling with anxiety and depression, that we felt that was going to really, it would be unique in the way that we animate the artwork as well, and just feel like it's textured and three-dimensional. And so that was, I think, something that brought to the table. And then in the film, there's also, you know, these old cartoons that we used. The cartoons weren't made to represent anxiety, but we found some really fabulous ones that we felt also helped tell the stories that we're hearing to add another level to the film.
There's a bigger context to talk about what we see in Anxious Nation in the sense of mental health in general, which up until pretty recently in American life has not been something that was talked about. If anything, it was, you were shamed to a large degree for talking about it out loud. And I feel like there's that sort of a long time coming for us to have an honest discussion about the importance of mental health. And then, as you said, Laura, we had COVID, and that COVID, the anxiety that brought it to these younger people who don't have a context for the world that they were beginning to understand, made, and as it's in the film, made everything, I'm sure, amplify all of these anxieties that we see. And it is something, and we can get into some of the statistics or all the shocking state of mental health for so many younger people in this country, as well as older people. I mean, it's across the board. But the idea that this country as a society has been very reticent to talk about mental health and its impact on our lives. And as you said, COVID comes along. How do you think that conversation has changed, and how is that reflected in the film in terms of that particular overarching perception we have about mental health, Laura?
Well, I think, you know, when we say this in the film, I think that if there was a silver lining to COVID, it's that it, you know, it's brought mental health to the forefront. So I think we're more keen on talking about it today than we've ever been. The problem is talking about it, it's a good start, but it certainly is not enough. You know, there's been talk about it campaigns happening for, you know, a decade.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons why so many college students, you know, pre-pandemic, were, you know, already turning to get help on college campuses because of the demand and because of the lack of resources. You know, the average wait time, and this is pre-pandemic, the average wait time on a college campus to get an intake appointment was 3 to 12 weeks. So if you're really struggling and or having suicidal ideation, that's life or death for a lot of these kids. And it, you know, and the statistics have only gotten worse as kids have returned back to campus. You know, that's kids of all ages, right? Middle schoolers. My daughter, you know, missed middle school because of COVID. And those are such important years. Interestingly, we're seeing, you know, what's happening now. She's a freshman in high school. is that a lot of the growth and maturity that happens in middle school is now sort of happening late, and it's making an already difficult experience of starting high school even more difficult. So it's not uncommon for kids not to be able to finish the day right now while they're going to school. My daughter will call and, you know, need to come home because her anxiety levels are so high. And there's a dozen kids in the nurse's office waiting for their parents to come and get them. And, you know, the CDC put out some really frightening statistics a couple of weeks ago, and particularly around young girls. And some of those statistics, they knocked me out when I saw it. 100% of all teens report increasing mental health challenges. 100%. There's 57% of girls feel persistently sad or hopeless. That's a 60% increase and the highest level reported over the past decade. There's nearly one in three seriously considered attempting suicide in 2021. And I can go on and on. I mean, you know, 52% of all LGBTQ plus individuals experienced poor mental health, and 22% attempted suicide in the last year.
Wow.
We have a crisis on our hands of colossal proportion. These numbers are so staggering. They're far worse than the numbers we saw of people, you know, with COVID. And, you know, when we shut the world down for that, we need to pay attention. What this tells us is that in the richest country in the world, we're failing our children, and we have to do better. You know, we have a system that was never set up right. It's not that the system is broken. It was never set up right. And we're so far behind now because the can has been kicked for decades. You know, the idea of being able to catch up on this is pretty daunting. And that's not to say that there isn't hope, because there is hope. There are so many tools that we can learn to manage our anxiety so it doesn't define who we are, so it doesn't control our lives. But it's really important that not only that we talk about it, we have to take action.
I want to let people know that they can go to anxiousnation.com to find out more about the film, which will be opening and live streaming. It'll be a world premiere live streaming event on May 3rd. It'll open in selected theaters nationwide and also VOD on May 5th. So be looking for it. And on the website, anxiousnation.com, in addition to information about the film, you also have an opportunity to explore resources. Just one of the very important parts of the film is not only highlighting specific examples of children, young adults going through mental health crisis, but also presenting a way forward, understanding that there are things that we can do to intervene, to essentially mitigate whatever it is, to allow people to be mentally healthy. And so you can go to anxiousnation.com, and there are resources available for anyone who wants to look further into it. As part of the audience watching Anxious Nation, I like the fact that the film is presented with not only young people, children experiencing mental health issues, the parents, how they're dealing with the sense of hopelessness at times, the sense of anxiety on the part of parents to help their children, and to see how that plays out. There are many examples in the film of that. And I think to see it the way it's presented, it really brings home the point of what I think the film, what makes the film so compelling. Vanessa, in terms of, you talked about the presentation and such, but the examples that we see in the film are heartbreaking. At the same time, there are many that are not. They're encouraging. Is there any one or two examples or anyone that you think highlights what I'm trying to describe here?
Well, I mean, I think one thing I'll just say about all the kids and parents as well in the film is their vulnerability that they were willing to share with the audience. And that was something that Laura and I spent a long time talking about while we were editing, because there are some moments in the film that are just so raw and uniquely captured, where I think, and there are projects and films where you see people sort of talking heads talk about the idea of something, but we have moments where we're watching kids, you know, in the middle of a panic attack or in the middle of, you know, a moment of anxiety that they're really not able to breathe through it at the time and having to bring themselves sort of back. And that's captured in the film. And moments where parents are saying some pretty harsh things to their kids, where you watch the fact that, of course, the parent is making the child anxious, and it's right there on, you know, right there in front of you. And it can be very cringy to see and really uncomfortable to watch for a minute. My first priority in any project is to make sure that the people in the film feel that the film itself is a safe place for them, that they are collaborators with us, and that we as filmmakers are listening and, you know, seeing what they need, and really protecting them when the film is something like this, where it's really about people who are so courageous to be willing to share their stories in as honest a way that they did in this film. So just to wrap back to Laura and I had a lot of conversations about whether we show some of those moments in the film. And I'm just sort of in awe of the families, because I think pushed for, there's some of the moments that I didn't think that would be okay for the kid to see and then grow up kind of having this moment in the film of them. And so we spent time with the families, talking to the kids, with their therapists. And it's actually become something that I'm so happy that Laura really pushed and knows her subjects so well and knew the family so well, that the experience from what they've expressed to us and what we've actually seen, because they've all come to so many screenings, is that this has been such an empowering film for them. And actually having those moments make them feel even better, because they share them. And then in these screenings, they've seen so much support from a community that says, yeah, that's me. I see myself in you. I see myself in that mother. I see myself in that kid. And just sort of to bring back how you started the conversation about this idea of shame and hiding things, I think it really became this sort of watershed moment for these families and communities to say, oh, wait, I recognize that panic attack. That's not something that's just happening when I'm alone or when I'm with my kids alone, but this is something that's happening in all these homes. And it just normalizes it, not normalizes it in a positive way in terms of, yeah, we should all get used to this, but it's just the reality. And so once we admit that this is what's happening for us, I think that's when we can start the conversations about how do we cope? How do we live with anxiety that's very real? How do we live in a world that it's not going to get easier? So we internally and personally need to, you know, find ways to get through a day. And then, as Laura said, on a policy level and a practice and resource level, you know, we need to look at how we're going to support our kids better, so that it's not police that show up at a door when somebody's having an issue or having to go to an emergency room where they're not prepared to handle, you know, young people in this way, you know, and we're rethinking how we approach kids' mental health.
Yeah. Laura, I grew up in a time when there was, as a young adult, becoming aware of the world, falling in love, getting through school, all those kinds of things that produce anxiety in anyone's life. But there's also the specter of, in the big picture, the specter of nuclear war. We were concerned that things might, just in a minute, we could all be gone. And that was something. But I think in today's world, there are so many things that are not only pressing on young people, but also the ability, the ease with which you can go online, and that can be an anxiety-inducing event. That's probably not the right word to use. But so today we have COVID. There's the anxiety around the future of the planet, school shootings. Is it more stressful to be a young person today than it's been before? Or is it just something that we are now finally recognizing as something that's a very important issue for us to be dealing with?
You know, I think it's a more stressful world, but it's always been a stressful world, to your point, right?
Yeah, thank you.
And I think that, one, I think we have a more identification of what's happening today, so that it's not just a behavioral problem, or, you know, he's just a rambunctious little boy. I think that we have a better understanding of what our children are experiencing. Therefore, we have better names for it. But look, I do think that right now we're living in really divisive times. You know, one might say that the 1960s were very divisive, and one might say, you know, the other times in history. I do think that the add on to that, eco-anxiety, school shootings, cultural unrest, all of the things that are now ratcheting things up. I think that the kids, you know, this push in so many places now for this political correctness is also adds a lot to the anxiety of both kids and their families, right? Yeah. So because they're hearing a lot of things at home too. And so I, you know, personally, I feel like it is, we're living in more anxious times. I think there's a lot of unknown in front of us at the moment too. And this is just my own personal opinion. Yeah. But, you know, I think that there is a nature nurture debate. And as we say in the film, if it's nature, it's you. If it's nurture, it's you.
Yes. And that's a great line.
Yeah, it is. It is Lynn Lyons who says it in the film, I think is just so great because she talks about the issues, you know, in and around anxiety and what's happening in such approachable ways. And I think some of the greatest takeaways from the film come from her. So all of our experts really have, you know, just so much wisdom to impart. And I think that's what's so great about the film is that there are so many takeaways from it. And I think that even if you don't realize this is what you do as a parent, because look, I was a parent who thought I was really doing things to help my daughter. And as it turned out, I was doing things that were adding to the problem. It was a big aha for me. It was a big eye-opening experience for me. But I know so many people who have watched the film now who feel that way, who have walked away going, oh my gosh, I had never thought of it that way. I never realized what I was doing was adding to the problem. And that's such a great place to come out of the film with that, not only a language that you can talk to your family with, right? But also with a better understanding that what our kids are going through is very, very real. So whether we as adults think it's anxiety inducing or not is irrelevant, right? What they're feeling is very real. They're not manipulating, you know, in most cases, right? They're not over-exaggerating. They can't process what they're feeling in the same way that we do through our very mature adult eyes. And lots of us as adults can't process it either. You know, I think there's a lot that adds to it. Certainly social media and our devices, you know, there's a lot of studies and correlation to, you know, higher rates of anxiety since the introduction of a smartphone and the pressures that the kids feel in that pursuit of perfection because of social media is an unfair standard that they think they need to live up to. There's a lot of factors that just didn't exist 20 years ago.
And can I just add to that too, not even just the content of social media, but just the bombardment all the time of information all the time from every direction and every place, just even just our brains, kids and adults, just the amount of information that we can actually process and, you know, with your devices and your laptops and all of the different ways that we can get that kind of information from around the world in an instant, every second, I think is another piece that's really important to look at as well. And, you know, one that actually you can take steps as an individual to, you know, to shut some of those things off sometimes. And I that is something that my kids and I talk about too, because they'll say to me that they don't feel it is their, let's say, whatever connections they have with their friends or things online that way, but it's really about how much is coming in to all of their different apps and things at all times.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of our evolution as human beings and society, it's just been a blink of the eye in terms of what when I grew up with television and radio and movies. Right. To the day is just unfathomable. It would have been at the time I grew up to be essentially what in the situation that you're describing.
Yeah. Where, I mean, and then that brings up too, like what Laura said about parents have thought they're doing the right thing. But the truth is too, we are really the first generation of parents to raise kids as it's the first generation of kids to have the kind of technology and access to the world that they have. we also don't know how this, you know, we're learning it too. So I think there's also a generational thing here as well, where we might not, you know, we don't know how to help the best that maybe, because it's all new and it's going, and things go very fast.
Right. Well, I do think that there is something a little bit to the idea that biologically our brains, you know, are we able to kind of process this information on a constant basis, as you were describing, Laura, for anybody to sort of be able to sort through it and be able to maintain a kind of an equilibrium in mental health equilibrium in all of this. And I think you're right. We're all learning how to kind of filter this and process it. But for someone who is a young person who doesn't have the context of the greater experience of human life, it's you're immediately in the kind of the crosshairs of all of this kind of madness in some ways. So it's a lot. And I thank you. Thank you both for your work on this and for the film Anxious Nation. Let me once again say you can go to anxiousnation.com to find out more. Film will be premiering. There's a kickoff event hosted by Joan London on May 3rd. The film has been executive produced by Kathy Ireland. The film will be available at that special event on May 3rd, but it will be available also in theaters and online beginning on May 5th. Be looking for this. And if nothing else, go to the website to see if you are struggling or your family is, the resources available there for you that can hopefully get you in the right, moving in the right direction. Anything that you would add to any of that, Laura or Vanessa?
Well, you know, Mike, thank you so much for having us. This has been so great talking with you. You know, we are so keen to have families see this film. We really want families to have access to this as a resource. And in, you know, our plan is to take it into the school system and into communities where it otherwise would not, you know, be easily seen. So, you know, our goal with this film is to really start a movement, and a movement that I know individually that we will not be able to move a mountain, but we are building an army that together we will be able to affect change. And that's really what needs to happen. We need to really, you know, get, you know, bond together as concerned parents, as concerned family members, that, you know, we demand more and better from our government, from federal, from, yeah, you know, state, from local government, to make this a priority, because our kids are suffering.
Thank you. And the film ends with a montage of people who we all know and recognize, who are talking honestly about their own mental health issues. And essentially, it's this wonderful way to end the film in terms of recognizing the issues around mental health, and then seeing yourself in the film and seeing others who have gone through it and can say to you, it'll get better. There are things that you can do for yourself, and the parents as well can do for themselves and their family. So once again, Anxious Nation will be opening in theaters and on VOD beginning on May 5th. Thank you so much to our guests today, Vanessa Roth, co-director and co-writer, as well as Laura Morton, co-director, co-writer, and producer of Anxious Nation. To both of you, thank you so much for spending some time with us here on Film School Radio.
Thanks for supporting us, Mike.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.